Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You could use a shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast, but it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, France 24, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, and Radio Havana Cuba. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. In the Philippines, there have been massive youth protests against government corruption. At the UN Climate Summit, Chinese President Xi announced new targets for cutting greenhouse gas emissions. The U.S. did not take part in that summit. Trump then addressed the U.N. General Assembly for 56 minutes. He had been allotted 15. NHK Japan.
We turn now to the Philippines, where over 200 people have been arrested and around 50 taken to hospital in connection with anti-corruption protests. Tens of thousands of people took to the streets of Manila on Sunday. Some held placards and voiced anger over alleged corruption involving government flood control projects. Clashes broke out with police, with people hurling rocks and firebombs. 216 people were arrested, and at least 46 were taken to hospital. Nearly 100 police officers were also hurt. The Philippines is frequently hit by natural disasters such as typhoons, causing landslides and flooding. Public criticism has been mounting since it was revealed some disaster prevention projects had not been implemented, even though their budgets had been allocated. There have also been allegations of collusion between business people and lawmakers.
I want the government officials to end the corruption and improve governance.
I hope the issue will be resolved quickly so that people will not suffer any longer.
A spokesperson for President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. said he condemned the violent protest actions, but he values freedom of expression. Chinese President Xi Jinping is highlighting his country's efforts to tackle climate change. He announced new targets to cut greenhouse gas emissions. Xi was among leaders of around 100 countries and regions who took part in a United Nations climate summit. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres urged countries to tackle climate change immediately.
It is still possible to limit global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees by century's end.
The United States did not take part. In a speech to the UN General Assembly the previous day, President Trump described climate change as the greatest con job ever perpetrated on the world. The Chinese president appeared to have the United States in mind.
The international community should stay focused on the right direction while some countries are acting against it.
Xi said China will cut economy-wide net greenhouse gas emissions by 7 to 10% from peak levels by 2035. U.S. President Donald Trump has addressed the United Nations General Assembly in New York, and he didn't hold back, tearing into other countries while heaping praise on himself.
1 year ago, our country was in deep trouble, but today, just 8 months into my administration, we are the hottest country anywhere in the world.
Trump used his time at the podium on Tuesday to claim he's ended 7 wars.
Everyone says that I should get the Nobel Peace Prize for each one of these achievements. But for me, the real prize will be the sons and daughters who live to grow up with their mothers and fathers, because millions of people are no longer being killed in endless and inglorious wars. What I care about is not winning prizes, it's saving lives.
And he took aim at other countries for recognizing a Palestinian state. Britain, Canada, Australia, and Portugal took the move on Sunday.
Some of this body is seeking to unilaterally recognize a Palestinian state. The rewards would be too great for Hamas terrorists for their atrocities. We have to stop the war in Gaza immediately. We have to stop it. We have to get it done. We have to negotiate. Immediately have to negotiate peace. We got to get the hostages back.
Trump said some nations are not doing enough to end Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
China and India are the primary funders of the ongoing war by continuing to purchase Russian oil. But inexcusably, even NATO countries have not cut off much Russian energy and Russian energy products.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're heard at 10 p.m. at 13710 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. NHK may also be found at most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. Next, France 24. First, a brief press review on the speech Trump made at the United Nations. A press review from the day before on the cancellation of Jimmy Kimmel, which was front page news around the world. France, along with 9 other countries, added their names to the 147 other countries already recognizing Palestinian statehood. We'll hear from both French and international press about that. Then a report on the naval ships from both Italy and Spain heading to protect the Gaza flotilla, which continues to be bombed by drones on their way to deliver emergency aid to Palestine. France 24.
Trump's aim is to blow up the rules of the international game.
Elitzer has been looking at how the papers are covering it.
Yes, Stuart, and as you can imagine, it's a cover story for many international newspapers as well. Let's take a look at British, the Daily Mirror here, that calls the speech, quote, deranged. It summarizes the speech that was 56 minutes long. It talked about climate, migrants, Gaza, but also escalators, marble floors, and teleprompters, and may I add, chaos. Then we have a French left-wing Libération here with a very opinionated headline that says, quote, Trump is pissing off the world, and the paper calls the speech staggering, violent, and incoherent. Moving then to a Spanish daily El País that estimates that Trump's aim is to blow up the rules of the international game, and Germany's Die Zeit agrees with that. The magazine says that Trump's accusations are becoming, quote, crazier every minute.
Papers still talking about one of our top stories, that shocking cancellation of Jimmy Kimmel's late night show. What interesting pieces have you found for us?
That's right, Allison. So let's start with the international papers and this opinion piece in British daily The Guardian that asks who is the next to be silenced after Jimmy Kimmel and Stephen Colbert. Of course, Colbert, his show was also cancelled in July after CBS paid Trump a large settlement to end the president's defamation lawsuit. And the article reminds that state censorship is illegal under the First Amendment. But unfortunately, that's what we're seeing currently in the United States. And the article also says that it is becoming dangerous to tell the truth in the United States during Trump's regime. Then we have Spanish paper El Mundo that's also reporting on the issue. The headline here reads, Bad Times for Comedians, and again, an attack on free speech. And the opinion piece says that since Donald Trump has returned to power, we are seeing more and more attacks on critical media that report on him and his MAGA movement. And the paper says that he didn't really get over his presidential loss during during the previous elections and his failed coup at the Capitol. And then we have Der Spiegel here. It's actually their cover story. And the paper writes that Donald Trump's next step is going after TV stations and revoking their broadcast licenses because the president feels that he has been treated unfairly. And it's no secret that Donald Trump cannot handle critical reporting, writes the paper, especially when articles and TV stations mock him.
The French papers, their coverage of France's recognition of the state of Palestine. What do you have?
Well, let's start with L'Humanité. They have quite a striking front page today here, a picture by artist Dugudus, France's Marianne, wearing a Phrygian cap and keffiyeh and embracing Palestine. Finally, their headline reads, the left-wing paper has historically supported the Palestinian cause. Now, Macron will be announcing France's recognition of the state of Palestine at the UN in New York later today, along with 9 other countries. L'Humanité calls it a first key victory towards the construction of a two-state solution. Let's look at Libération now and their front page. Here, a historic step. They call it a photo of Macron's outstretched hand. Now, the paper is not usually a great fan of the president, but it says that without Macron, the concept of Palestinian statehood would be left behind in France. La Croix, also covering the story on their front page this morning here, calling it a powerful gesture, but not an end in itself. It highlights that Palestine was already recognized by 148 states and adding 10 more, including 2 Security Council members to that list, will have huge legal and diplomatic consequences. Le Figaro has a slightly different take on the situation here, calling it a risky move. The paper wonders if it might not be a pointless diplomatic stunt and says that the Palestinian people might have to pay a price for the symbolic gesture. Finally, from France, L'Opinion has this front page hit today saying that Macron is going all in. They have this cartoon in the corner there showing Macron facing Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who says, quote, I thought I had succeeded in making Palestine unrecognizable.
What about the international papers? What are they saying, Emily?
Well, let's start in Belgium with the paper Le Soir here on their front page. One of the 10 countries to recognize Palestine today. It calls it a symbolic turning point and discusses the 10 countries most likely to take part: the United Kingdom, Belgium, Canada, France, Australia, Portugal, Luxembourg, Malta, probably New Zealand, and most likely Liechtenstein. But the paper focuses on the countries not making that list, including the United States, Japan, South Korea, and Germany. Now, heading to Portugal with the Diario de Noticias, they have this front page here today. And they're quoting the foreign minister here, saying that it's the only path to a just and sustainable peace. Now, heading to the UK, and The Guardian, the left-wing paper, has this opinion piece today. It hopes that the recognition of a Palestinian state will be a call to action and not just conscience-solving. It says that promoting a mirage of statehood without taking meaningful action to stop the conflict would actually just be cruel. On the right of the British press, The Times has this front page, Palestine recognition, great prize for Hamas. It features comments from Israeli officials as well as family members of some of the hostages taken on October 7th. And finally, L'Orient Le Jour, the French language Lebanese paper, says finally, but maybe already too late. It says the move is vital and insufficient at the same time, and it is as late as it is desperately needed.
This Navy frigate is one of 2 Italian ships set to accompany the global Samud flotilla and assist in possible rescue operations after the humanitarian group was targeted by drone attacks off the coast of Greece overnight on Tuesday. Italy's Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni condemned the incident while also criticizing the flotilla's motives. Several Italian lawmakers from left-wing parties are among those aboard the ships. As an alternative to the flotilla, Rome has suggested handing over their aid in Cyprus to the Latin Patriarchate of Jerusalem, who could then deliver it to Gaza. Pedro Sanchez has, in contrast, expressed his support for the humanitarian motivations of the organization.
The Spanish government demands compliance with international law and respect for our citizens' right to sail safely in the Mediterranean. I can therefore inform you that tomorrow a maritime action vessel equipped with all the necessary resources will set sail from Cartagena.
Organizers of the Global Summit Flotilla say it consists of around 50 vessels and participants from dozens of countries. The flotilla has been the target of several drone attacks since docking in Tunisia. Activists on board blame Israel for the incidents.
Those press reviews and report were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, and most podcast sites. On to Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. A report by Carla Rienste of Fridays for Future, a German environmental group. She describes the history of the current climate activism, how boycotts and civil disobedience have been joined by public surveys to show politicians that the citizens do care about the degraded climate and do want action to be taken. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
All of us are witnessing how the climate crisis is escalating. We are seeing more heat waves, more floodings, more droughts. And at the same time, the fossil fuel companies are pushing for more and more projects for the exploration of fossil fuels. And we're seeing that governments are, pushing back on climate legislation. And that's why we're going on the streets.
Fridays for Future have been at the heart of the climate movement for 7 years now. But what has the movement achieved during this time? How has it changed? And where does it stand today? The climate movement is changing. It's no longer only about mass school strikes or disruptive blockades. New initiatives have emerged, groups that try to meet people where they are and listen to their concerns. One of these groups is Klima Neustart, which means climate reset. Instead of organizing large demonstrations, young activists head out onto the streets of Berlin. The aim? To speak directly with citizens about their concerns and wishes regarding the climate crisis. The answers are collected and quantified using an app developed by the group. It transforms everyday worries into concrete data that can be presented to politicians and decision makers. This method reflects a growing trend in climate activism. The goal? To bridge the gap between citizens and policymakers, giving ordinary people a voice in shaping climate policies.
I think what's really important for the climate movement is trying out things and then looking what works and going that direction.
But to understand why these new approaches are emerging, we need to look back at where it all began. The modern climate movement took off in 2018 when 15-year-old Swedish student Greta Thunberg staged a one-person protest outside her parliament. From that solitary strike grew Fridays for Future, a global movement of children and young people across the world who left their classrooms every Friday to demand urgent climate action. At its peak in 2019, it saw millions of people taking to the streets, with scientists also joining the cause. But the climate crisis worsened and temperatures have continued to rise. Some activists concluded that traditional strikes and marches weren't enough.
Extinction
Rebellion! Movements like Extinction Rebellion, which emerged in the United Kingdom, embraced civil disobedience as a core strategy. By blocking streets, occupying public spaces, and staging theatrical interventions, they forced the public and politicians to confront the urgency of the climate emergency.
They peacefully occupied bridges all across London. And they had wave after wave of protests, and they managed to have the UK government declare a climate emergency. And this would have not happened if they had just like written a petition or sent a letter to their to the parliament.
In Germany, letzte Generation or last generation adopted similar tactics, blocking roads by gluing themselves to asphalt, throwing paint at famous paintings, and other highly visible disruptions became their signature.
We managed to push the issue of the climate crisis into media, into talk shows, into conversations with politicians. Civil disobedience is a massively successful strategy to bring politicians, to bring societies to act on an issue that has big moral consensus, like the climate crisis.
But the tactics have been controversial. Critics argue they alienate the public, cause frustration, and may even undermine the broader climate movement. In the UK, some climate activists have even received prison sentences for repeated acts of civil disobedience. Supporters say that without disruption, the crisis is too easily ignored, and conventional protests have failed to translate into political action.
We've really seen a lot of smear campaigns against climate activism in general. I do think that civil disobedience can oftentimes be a very integral part of social movements. We've seen that, for example, around the protests around the coal mines in Germany. There was a lot of civil disobedience, and that was really crucial in ensuring that we now have the coal phase out in Germany.
Geopolitical crises like the Russian war in Ukraine, the Israeli offensive in Gaza, and US trade tariffs have pulled political attention away from the climate emergency. A German poll earlier this year showed that voters were more concerned about issues like domestic and social security, migration, and economic growth. But another survey showed most people wanted to see more ambitious climate policies from their parties. In 2015, governments agreed to limit global warming to 2 degrees Celsius, pursuing efforts to keep it below 1.5 degrees, as part of the Paris Agreement. Since then, average temperatures have risen, and we are experiencing more frequent and worse extreme weather events like heat waves, drought, heavy rain, leading to flooding and wildfires.
Every crisis, as everybody knows, also is an opportunity to change a lot of things in a very short time. And I feel like this is where we're at. We need to be ready to act when crisis hits, to then make the change we need.
That's what activists say the climate movement continues to fight for. Today, we see a diversified movement. Mass strikes continue with Fridays for Future, while disruptive actions push boundaries, and new grassroots initiatives focus on dialogue and citizen engagement.
I think that's a winning strategy, having those different tactics combined together.
Climate activism is no longer a single method. It's a spectrum of strategies responding to an unprecedented crisis. And it's a movement that is still supported by a lot of people from all walks of life across the world.
That interview and report was from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary, and most podcast sites, as is the Shortwave Report. If you have questions or comments about the Shortwave Report, or could help support this show like a faithful listener in New York City did this week, PayPal contact information is available at my website, outfarpress.com, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Your donations are essential for the weekly production and distribution of this show, which I supply freely to more than 100 radio stations around the world. And if you're listening on a public radio station, please support them as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. At the United Nations, Colombian President Petro denounced U.S. imperialism, including recent U.S. targeted murders off the coast of Venezuela. The Committee to Protect Journalists reported that Israeli airstrikes had killed 31 journalists in Yemen. There were massive street protests in Brazil against a congressional bill that would protect lawmakers in coup attempts. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The Colombian government has terminated arms purchases from the United States, its largest military partner, as tensions rise with the Trump administration over accusations that Colombia is failing to combat cocaine trafficking. Colombian President Gustavo Petro denounced U.S. intervention, saying his government will not be blackmailed and that more cocaine has been seized under his administration than ever before. Last night, at the United Nations General Assembly in New York City, Colombian President Gustavo Petro delivered a scathing speech denouncing U.S. imperialism with examples of U.S. intervention down through the years. As the Colombian president stood to speak, apparently tipped off that Petro would sound the alarm on Washington's dirty work, the entire U.S. delegation at the United Nations walked out, as they would not have to bear the truth from Colombia's president, Gustavo Petro, who received a long ovation after he finished his speech, a scathing speech against the United States, at the United Nations last night. And the White House said on Monday it was disappointed by an offer by Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro to engage in direct talks with President Trump aimed at de-escalating a U.S. naval buildup near Venezuela's coast. The brush-off came after Trump declared that he had ordered the bombing of another vessel that he alleged was trafficking drugs without any proof or any evidence. The strikes appear to have occurred outside of any declared war zone, targeting civilians who pose no immediate threat in an attempt to provoke Venezuela into conflict with the United States. Nicolas Maduro, the president of Venezuela, has said that Venezuela will not be provoked and will not enter into a escalation of violence. The Committee to Protect Journalists says that recent Israeli airstrikes on the newspaper offices in Yemen have killed 31 journalists and media support workers, making it the deadliest attack on journalists anywhere in the world in nearly 20 years. The CPJ, the Committee to Protect Journalists, said that the attack was the second deadliest attack on the press ever recorded by the organization. 31 Yemeni journalists killed in a deadly attack on newspaper offices on Monday. Tens of thousands of protesters have taken to the streets across Brazil to protest a congressional bill that would make it harder to charge lawmakers for alleged crimes and even reduce penalties for individuals involved in former President Jair Bolsonaro's coup attempt. Bolsonaro was sentenced earlier this month to 27 years in prison for trying to cling to power and for hatching a plan to assassinate his opponent, Lula da Silva, the current president of the Brazil, and who won a 2022 presidential election. Maria Alice Barbosa, a student in Rio de Janeiro, said, "I think this amnesty for Bolsonaro is ridiculous because these are people who harmed Brazilian society, the Brazilian people. As citizens, we have to be here fighting, speaking out, showing our faces. People can't hide if we don't want them to repeat what happened in the past. As young people, we need to keep this in mind so that people know their rights and can fight for them." The Palestinian Medical Relief Society says a medical center in Gaza City has been destroyed by Israeli shelling, resulting in injuries to at least two medical workers. The Palestine Medical Relief Society said that Israeli forces have hindered the evacuation of central equipment and supplies from the center, which provided vital services such as treating injuries, supporting cancer patients, and managing blood donations. The official Palestinian Wafa news agency reported on Tuesday yesterday that the charity noted that Israeli troops are currently besieging another medical center in the Tel Ahawa area of the city, Gaza City, adding that they have also demolished a medical clinic, in a refugee camp. Meanwhile, the Gaza Health Ministry said that Israeli forces have attacked 39 hospitals since October, resulting in the tragic loss of at least 1,723 doctors and healthcare workers.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu most of the time, but there are no podcasts. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You do have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report's been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm still recuperating from a spinal injury. I'm staying in a house that's connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.